You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. If you'd like to buzz in on tonight's show, you can buzz us at 424-256-1729. That's 424-256-1729. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show.
Because as we all know, Game of Thrones is the best show on television.
No debating that.
Yeah,
no debating that.
So, happy Easter.
Happy Easter, everybody. And Passover for those of the Jewish listeners.
Don't want to leave anyone out.
So we are talking about episode 2, The Nightlands. And, you know, we're doing it with Bing, and Bing is for doing. So we are doing episode 2. I am Dave Klein, being joined by the lovely Simone Boyce and lovely Kristen Snyder.
That would be Daenerys.
Daenerys over there.
I'm just Simone Boyce today. Yeah, I missed out on the cosplay memo.
So I decided that Joffrey would never wear armor, but you know who would? The Kingslayer.
Nice.
Jamie Lannister wears it. Screw that, Joffrey. And you know what? I didn't get a haircut this week, so I'm growing it out. It'll get there. Okay, guys? Okay, guys? And in the booth, Ronnie Jr.
What up, Ronnie?
Hello, Ronnie. Everybody.
Hello.
Ronnie. If I wasn't drawn in last week by your passion for Game of Thrones, and now you're in costume.
What costume are you wearing, Ronnie?
Are we coming on too strong, Ronnie?
No, I love it. And you know how I know you're not coming on too strong? The iTunes. Okay, listen. So you guys were the number one AfterBuzz show like 4 days out of all seven last week.
Just so you know.
Nice. So that's
good
my thing.
To know.
That's my thing.
And, that's all thanks to you, fans. That's thanks to you.
Yes, thank you.
And I think it's cool because you guys are putting in the extra effort, having fun with it, the costumes. And again, Game of Thrones is a show that I probably wouldn't sit down and watch. But now I want to know about, what's her name? Daenerys?
Mm-hmm.
Because we got our own Daenerys here. But anyways, you guys are doing a great job.
iTunes. And you don't want to know more about Jaime Lannister? Whatever, Roddy.
I'm not sure if he's wearing any clothes under that shield.
Maybe I'm not.
Anyways, iTunes, comment, rate. You guys are doing a great show. We love it. So tell us about episode
Maybe
number two.
Maybe I'm not wearing any clothes under this table either.
Whoa. Oh, okay.
All right. Well, that would be in tune with this week's episode and all the sexiness that was going on.
Sex this
episode.
Do you
guys think it was necessary, all the sex scenes? What's
some
your take on that?
Some of it was not necessary.
Some of it was disappointing to me, because let me just throw out that Theon Greyjoy was supposed to be getting a blowjob in that scene, so whatever.
Yeah, they tend to hype it up or heighten it up a little bit. But okay, I'm sorry. The scene in Littlefinger's brothel where he, you know,
wipes the little dribble.
Yeah, that's disgusting. I'm sorry.
Not sure that was necessary.
Not necessary at all.
Definitely not in the books.
No, definitely not. And just like, that's just HBO being HBO. But I feel like with a show like Game of Thrones, you don't really need to do that.
Yeah, I mean,
you know what though? It's like a game plan over there. You know, they're in the game. They're playing. It's like final moment of the basketball quarter. You're in. There's a turnover. All right, it's your turn to go in. Whore number two.
Yeah,
George R.R. Martin said, you know, that they didn't want to go to just any network, and they sort of had to go to HBO. Otherwise, they would have had to cut a lot of crucial material that was explicit at times.
Right.
But I think, you know, HBO can tone it down. Dan and David, come on with the sex scenes.
It's just a little too much sex position.
I
just don't see how it's pushing the story forward.
Right.
All that it makes me think is Theon Greyjoy is...
Well, he kind of is a man whore, and we'll
totally
get on
is.
That when we get over to them. But we've got some fun stuff coming up for you guys later in this show. We've got a special report.
Yeah, we do.
And that's all about the intro scene. See if you guys notice what we're going to point out. And then we've got a news report
about
the Dothraki.
Yeah, we touched on a little bit last week, but We'll talk about it again this week.
You know, fantasy used to kind of be like politics and religion. You couldn't talk about it in public with your friends. And now everyone loves Game of Thrones. And it's kind of the cool thing to talk about. And I think that's because George R.R. Martin has grounded it in reality. And that's why it's so plausible. And so fantasy has become cool.
I've always talked about fantasy in my free time. I'm just saying. So now I'm cool. I used to not be cool.
Yeah,
now
right?
I'm cool. Thank
it's
you,
first,
Game of Thrones.
First date material
geek
kind
is
of
in.
Stuff.
Look, I used to... I just wear this around normally. This isn't even a costume. This is actually my normal day wear that I have on right now. Thank you. But let's start with our first topic. So
yes.
We've got the Lannisters. Mm-hmm. The Lannisters make a big statement here. We got Tyrion making lots of statements this episode.
Yeah. It's all about power plays with the Lannister siblings. It's always like trying to one-up each other, and Cersei and Tyrion are just always going at it, like, who can do the next thing to send someone over the edge?
And they all hate Tyrion because his mother died during his childbirth.
Yeah.
But come on, I mean, who really would hate one of their brothers and sisters because of that?
It's just another reason to hate. Mm-hmm. It's not, I don't think it's fair, obviously, but it's just another reason to hate.
I mean, I guess I think during the time and era of that show, it was considered bad luck and they didn't know how to properly give birth like they didn't during the medieval ages, which is what this is very much based off of. So that must be why, is because it's like that.
Yeah.
And none of the other kids died from childbirth, and of course it was the imp.
Right. I think Tyrion is so easy to hate, which makes it so cool that George chose him to be such a strong character, because he has all these flaws. He's a tragic character, but, I mean, he's smart, and that's what's going to get him.
But he says he's not a man of honor.
Yeah.
As he tells Varys, who's talking to Shay. What do you guys think about that?
So I was kind of intrigued by this, because this is actually something that was, I thought would have been in the first episode, was Varys meeting Shay. And instead, they pushed it back to here, which is cool, but it's definitely Varys is showing there's a reason he's the master of whispers here, and he knows exactly what's going on. He kind of threatens Tyrion a little bit with the fact of his vast knowledge, which we see a lot with Littlefinger and Varys this episode. I feel like there's a lot of clashing
of threats going
with Littlefinger and Varys between the nobles.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Tyrion is trying to hide Shay from his dad because obviously he doesn't want her in King's Landing, but can he really trust Varys? That's the question.
No one can trust Varys.
Yeah,
Varys says, I'm good at keeping secrets from all my friends, but he'll use those secrets when the time is necessary.
But I like that Tyrion isn't, like, he's learned from Ned Stark's mistakes. Like, him saying, I don't have honor, I feel like that's almost like, do not put me in the same category as Ned Stark. I am not stupid. I know how to play this game. So it's cool to see him, like, actually, like, you know what? Putting people in their place, like Varys and...
Yeah, I mean, being a good man, George R. R. Martin has shown that that's not good enough to be king.
Or to live.
Or to be a good ruler. I mean, just being a moral guy like Ned, that's not a good ruler. You can't do that. You have to be sort of pragmatic and leave your heart behind and be more cynical.
And we also have that argument this episode with Tyrion and Cersei about what makes a good king. And Cersei's like, you have no idea. You do not understand how to rule. There's weeds growing under the bed, and the only thing you can do is snip them before they get to you. And Tyrion's like, well, I think there's more to ruling than that, Cersei.
Yeah, it seems like the whole, like, at least Tyrion's narrative journey throughout this episode was to figure out who sent out the command to start killing the babies.
Right.
And he eventually does figure it out, but it's not who he thought. And I think it's interesting because it's sort of a flip-flop from the last episode where Tyrion is telling Cersei, you don't know how to rule, and moreover, you don't know how to be a parent. But this time around, it's Cersei telling Tyrion, you don't know how to rule, which I think I don't think that's true. I don't think Cersei knows the first thing about ruling.
Well, we find out that Jonos is now going to be joining the Night Watch.
Yes.
And Bronn will be the new commander of the Night's
Watch. I love
of the King's Guard.
I love this scene in the books and in this. It was a little bit different in the books. I want to point this out because it's something that I think is kind of a cool thing they did. I actually think they might have done a little bit better in the show with how they connected this, which is we get a scene right beforehand, which is the messenger coming from the Starks. and talking to Cersei about the Night's Watch needing more men. And you didn't really get that in the book. The Messenger hadn't gotten there yet in the books at that point. So then that's a direct correlation with what we see coming up, where then Tyrion sends him to the Night's Watch. So now you know why. He has a reason outside of just knowing the Night's Watch needs more people. We get the Messenger explaining it earlier, and I think that was a good TV choice for why they did that.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. And the Night's Watch, as we can see, could definitely use him.
Yes, they can.
But Cersei has all the confidence in the Night's Watch, and she doesn't think that they need new people.
I don't
know
if she has the confidence. I think she just does not give a funk or wagnol about the Night's Watch.
I think she's just very ignorant of what's actually happening.
Oblivious.
She has no idea.
Which is why I think it's stupid that she thinks she knows how to rule. She's obviously a little, she has a different self-image.
Right. And then we also
really
have, the babies being killed, being brought up again here with how Tyrion thinks this is not good. You are ruining the people's trust in you because they don't want to hear that you're murdering babies. They don't know why. Right. And all they know is you're murdering babies for some reason.
Right.
Not cool. And we have Roz, the imaginary character who exists in the show, crying about this. And so, for those who don't remember from season one, this is a little grossitude that was brought up again about Littlefinger. Varys kind of mentions this very slyly in season one to Littlefinger about how Littlefinger has basically been whoring out dead girls to very rich nobles and necrophiliacs, and he basically threatens Roz with, hey, if you don't stop crying, I just might give you up to a necrophiliac, without really telling her that that's what it was, but it's implied.
Right.
Some more grossness as you guys are talking about with the sex stuff.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of that?
You know, the Roz storyline, I guess it's, I don't know that the Roz storyline really adds to the overall progression of the story, in my opinion. I think it's just one of those choices. Like, HBO growing up was one of those networks that I wasn't allowed to watch because of the sexually implicit nature of it. So they're still keeping the tradition alive today with Game of Thrones. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of the Roz storyline, but
she may prove to be a bad investment for all of us, and not just Peter Baelish.
Yes.
I mean, so she's definitely also the whole scene there, basically, that was also the sex thing we mentioned, too, was that whole scene was just leading to Roz crying.
Yeah. I mean, but maybe that's, you know, a prelude to us actually seeing, you know, as you talked about in the book, what exactly could be her fate if she continues to be unhappy.
Right. So do you guys think, though, that this is their way for the TV show, using Roz to show the people's unhappiness? Maybe that's why.
I was thinking that, too. Because I saw on the message boards, a lot of people were like, that's too much with the baby. You know, in the books, you didn't get, obviously, a view like that, and you wouldn't probably imagine it like that. So
yeah,
I think it was a bit too much for viewers, maybe.
I think that's a good point, that she could be sort of the producer's voice for the common people. And I guess also this is another way to really bring in Peter Baelish and sort of juice up his storyline a little bit. We get to see a lot more of him through Roz.
And, you know, he was kind of sly in the first season, I feel like. You get that he's not the best of guys, but this kind of really for the first time brings out his truly cruel side.
Base nature, yeah.
Because he's kind of like, you can tell he's not the best guy, and he kind of mentions and he slides, something's a little off about him, and I feel like this is what brings it out a bit.
Yeah, well, we do have to remember that he is a pimp, so he's not someone you'd want to bring
home. Smack you with his pimp spoon.
Yeah, exactly.
I used to like him.
Yeah.
Used to.
Not so much.
Okay, so why was there so much Greyjoy in this episode? I would have much rather seen Joffrey killing someone, Robb Stark being King of the North, or something, but no, we get Greyjoy.
Well, I do like
putting on his sister.
Yeah. I was really looking forward to seeing that scene on TV, because that's just such a, like, hilarious thing. I can't stand, I'll put it out there right now, cannot stand Theon Greyjoy. I think he's a womanizer and he's disgusting. So I love this scene because he gets a dose of his own medicine, you know, with his sister Yara.
I always kind of like his description, though, that he's always smirking, and I don't know.
Yeah.
To me, that's like, I like tricksters like that, and that's what he comes off as. But he does get a dose of his own medicine, and again, a little difference here where when he first gets out on the docks, he's actually led by his uncle, Euron Greyjoy, to the castle, and instead he's led, unbeknownst to him, his sister, who he hasn't been there in like 10 years, so he's not going to know what she looks like. But we do see some other things with like the ship that are a little bit different too, where instead of him talking, he's the one kind of explaining to the girl in the books about how, you know what, the Greyjoys are all womanizers. To him, that's something he's very proud about, and they kind of gloss over that. And I'm just saying that because you mentioned that's why you don't like them, and I feel like it's almost glossed over a bit.
Because he's
so proud of it in the books, and this time we don't see that.
Yeah, they definitely changed a couple things up with that scene and in the ship. The casting of that girl, though, she was really ugly.
Wow. How would you like to be casted as the girl with the ugly boobs?
The really scary areolas.
You know what's funny, though, is in the book they described her as having pleasant boobs, but being a little overweight. And that was the issue. He was like, it'll just have to do. She'll be my salt wife.
I think some weight would have added to those.
Oh, I know. Those were maybe scary.
They were lacking a little plumpness in my personal opinion.
That was the thrown-offness I was getting from the books. I was like, I thought she was going to be pleasantly plump, and she was not.
Actually asked her to keep her mouth shut when she smiles.
I like that line.
Well, the funny thing, and this is in the book, he basically tells her to give him a BJ so he doesn't have to hear her talking anymore. That's what's in the book. So this is almost the same thing as keep your mouth shut, and the way they
decided
do the
to
same
do,
sort of yeah. thing. Like, keep your mouth shut.
Yeah. Also, another important difference to mention is the changing of his sister Asha's name to Yara.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that was to differentiate from Osha, which is the wildling that is now a ward of the Starks and sort of Bran's new companion.
Okay, so what did you guys think of the scene where we get to meet Baelin and we get to see his interaction with Theon and everyone, like that scene? And actually, something really cool I want to point out first is we finally get to see the Kraken crest over the fireplace, which is the Greyjoy crest, looking pretty badass when he walks in. But what did you guys think of that whole scene?
I thought it said a lot about his father and sort of who the Iron Price. I really liked that. The Iron Price is to take it, take your crown, take your jewelry, take your clothes, rather than buying it. So take it from the corpse that you just kill. And I really liked that, getting to know about the Iron Price, because it definitely tells a lot about you rather than having to have money. And he says, you know, Ned Stark has dressed you like a whore, you're in all this gold, and you're delivering message like a raven. His dad is definitely not a father I would like.
It's almost very Dothraki in a sense when you think about that your pride is like what you get and what you win from fighting in that way.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
I loved this scene. I love the acting. I think the casting of Patrick Malahead is, like, perfect. His wardrobe.
You just love Theon getting what was coming to him.
I do. I do. He just looks so salty. Like, everything, he looks like he literally, like, went in the ocean and, like, came back out and never changed his clothes. And just all of the Iron Islands looked so magical. I really liked. Yeah. And what? Yeah.
And as they very much talk about, too, they're like, have you commanded your own ship? That's all that matters, is how long has it been since you've been in the water?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they care about, because that's their pride and joy at the Iron
Salt
Islands.
Salt and iron,
yeah. But not farming and not fishing, because you can't really do that there.
No.
I feel like somebody needed to slap Theon, so I was kind of happy that his father came in and kind of laid it to him, because at that point he was all like, I'm going to be king someday, and this is a story to tell your children.
Mm-hmm. Very cocky.
You know, he comes off so much more cocky now that he's away from the Starks than he was when he was with the Starks. Mm-hmm. Like, all of a sudden it just pulls out of him. He's like super cocky.
What are you
going to
do when you're like living as a hostage, essentially? You can't really
I mean, they treated
act
him
like
pretty
that.
Well, though.
No, yeah, totally. Him. No, that's why, I mean, he's so, like, disgruntled and all and, like, cocky, but I'm like, you lived, like, in a great castle or a great keep or whatever in the north, and they treated you well. I mean, maybe it was a little colder than you would have liked, but he was treated well.
I do like that we got to see him defending Rob a little bit, too.
Yeah.
Because that's good. At least he was defending Rob. And he does that in the books, but also here we get to see him do it. So he does care about Rob, at least.
At least about Rob. Not so much maybe about Ned Stark. I think he has a lot more feelings of aggression towards Ned Stark than
I feel like Rob. He has some secret plans. It's kind of like he's been building up this revenge plot, you know, while he's been held as a prisoner with the Starks.
So then, speaking of the sea, we get a little sea scene with the Baratheons as we get to meet Salladhor Saan, with speaking with Davos Seaworth and his son Devon Seaworth. And Salador's interaction was a little bit different because what I personally was really hoping for was him to talk about the Lightbringer, the sword, because that was, to me, a big thing in the book was him not at all believing that Lightbringer is the sword that Stannis pulled out of the fire. He's like, that's just a crappy sword now because you put it in a fire. That's not the Lightbringer. But he doesn't mention it at all.
Yeah, we didn't get too much about Lightbringer. It's going to be interesting to see how much we will actually get, how deep they will go into that. But I guess what we did get out of the scene is we got to see a little more of Davos's past as a smuggler and who he used to be in cohorts with, which was Salladhor Saan.
Yeah, I mean, as if this show isn't good enough, you're going to bring in pirates?
Yeah.
I'm a wannabe pirate for everyone who
You know what? Your ripped shirt doesn't only look Dothraki in a way.
Yeah.
It looks kind of piratey in a way.
I'll take that. I'll be a pirate all day. All day.
You know what else we get from Salador? The really important thing is his main motivation for pillaging King's Island
is banging Cersei.
He doesn't want to rape her.
No.
He wants to just make love to her.
He just wants some Cersei action.
How does he even know what she looks like?
Well, she's supposed to be well known for her beauty, which she's a little older in the show than I think she really is. A lot of the characters are older in the show than they really are. Like, Robb Stark, I think, is 13 in the book.
Yeah.
More like 20 here in the show.
They talked about that, and George R.R. Martin said that, you know, he kind of based this story off of medieval times, and in medieval times, they had childhood and they had adulthood. There wasn't the adolescence period. However, when you're making a show, you can't have sex scenes with people under 18, so that's why they had to cast them older, and they had to move everyone's age.
I totally get why he wrote it that way, but for me and the society we live in, it's definitely more acceptable and pleasing for me to watch it with the older characters. Because you kind of believe that someone, a 20-year-old, is going to be a badass fighter with the sword, where you watch a 13-year-old kid with the sword fighting a war, which could happen in the medieval times, but you're going to watch it and be like, that kid's not going to do crap. I could push him, like, kick him over.
This is medieval times,
with this armor,
Dave.
Baby.
What's crazy?
Respect the realm.
What's crazy to think about is that these kids, it's literally going to be like Harry Potter. Like, I mean, we're going to get to see them grow up over this series. By the time they're done, they're going to be, you know, 7 or 8 years older. And that's going to be a challenge for the producers in the show. They're going to have to, like, they have to shoot and make sure that the kids don't grow up too fast.
I know. Is Neville Longbottom going to become the best looking one of them, even though he's supposed to be the ugliest? That's a Harry Potter geeky reference for those of you who like Harry Potter.
I was like, oh God, where's my character sheet?
he's not in Game of Thrones.
No, he's not.
I want magic and magicians. I love Harry Potter.
There's going to be magic.
So what's going on with Davos' son saying he wants his father to have a god?
Yeah, that's definitely that religious sort of barrier. And, like, religion is always up. It's always up for grabs in Westeros. And it's interesting to see how his son is clinging to the Lord of Light, Melisandre's god, and Stannis' new god. But Davos still isn't sold on it.
You know what something I'm wondering is that in the books, they have it so Davos is very, very against going to war. He thinks it's a bad idea. He doesn't think Stannis can do it. He kind of argues with Salador a little bit about it, too. He just doesn't think it's a good idea, and he wants to advise Stannis against it, whereas in the show, we don't get that at all. He completely thinks we're ready for war. And I'm kind of just wondering why they made that decision, because then when we see the scene where Stannis is there and with Melisandre and Davos, originally I think in the books it was Davos who ends up talking alone with Stannis, and instead we get it so it's Melisandre.
Yeah, we don't get to see, like, the fact that Melisandre and Stannis are, like, banging it out is, like, we don't find that out for a very long time in the book. So, I mean, they're definitely bringing the sex in, like this whole episode has shown.
I mean, I really enjoyed that part because up until that part, you know, Stannis was just like, no, you know, I took a vow, I'm married. And then she's all like, but I'll give you a son. And then suddenly he's turned on. And ladies, don't take your pickup lines from Game of Thrones. If you go out telling guys you're going to give him a son, that's not going to turn them on. Just
actually,
saying.
Here's a little factoid for you guys.
Don't use it.
All that there are is daughters is actually the guy's fault. Biologically, for whatever reason, it's usually the guy's fault. Yeah. So if it's just daughters, it's not your problem, ladies. It's actually the guy's problem.
That sucks because, I mean, they obviously didn't have the technology to realize that back then. So the women just automatically
Right, so they would just get screwed. So, like, if a guy kept having sex with tons of different girls and only having daughters, that's probably why.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
Makes sense. And then I believe they had sex on the map from the intro.
Okay. Getting those, like, little pawns in her back and stuff, that's gotta hurt.
Yeah.
Like, all those, like, ship models. Like,
look, she likes it rough, okay?
I'd be like,
Game of Thrones, it's rough.
Take me to a proper, like, bedroom or something. Like, don't subject me to your war table.
She's got a plot that's rising.
Yes.
Oh.
Oh.
Okay, so I want to bring out another huge, huge difference. So let's bring it back now. Let's talk about the bastard child, Gendry and Arya. And we got big, big difference from the books here where Arya decides to tell Gendry the truth that she's Ned Stark's daughter. She does not say that at this point in the books for a long time.
Very long time.
Very long time. So, wow. What do you think? Do you think that was just so HBO can create a stronger relationship between them?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I love their dynamic because it reminds me of Arya and Jon Snow. This is like, I feel like her brother away from home.
I agree.
So I do think that's a choice on behalf of the producers and writers to sort of facilitate that like brother-sister relationship faster.
And we see that whenever he's saying, oh, I should be calling you a lady.
Yeah.
And she kind of pushes him and is like, don't call me a lady. So we've got that brother-sister bond developing.
Yeah.
They're kind of my favorite right now.
They're
I wish
so
I would have seen more of them.
I think Arya's awesome. And
yes,
actually,
she's my favorite.
Did you guys know she looks different in this season too?
Oh, yeah.
They totally changed her look. It looks like her hair's a little darker too.
Actually, they asked her if she would cut her hair for season two because in season one she wore a wig and there was lots of pins.
Yeah.
And it took her a really long time for them to get her ready. So they asked if she would cut her hair and she was thinking about it and she looked on the internet and a lot of people were like, she's too young. She's not going to cut her hair. And then she was like, you know what? I'm going to cut my hair. So she did it. She has the boy look. And she said now for her getting ready, they just throw a lot of grease on her. So it's much easier. So she did change her look.
She looks great.
Yeah, she looks cool. Yeah. I love her in this.
Can you guys see a little like boobage though under her armor? Does it look
I could see a little bit.
She might be developing as a nice young lady on the show.
Yeah, so we'll have to see it through 7 years. Another Harry Potter reference. It'll be like Hermione. I'm just throwing them out there, okay?
Sorry, I'm like, I don't know too much about Harry Potter. I know it's
Since we made a comparison earlier, for those who like Harry Potter, there's another comparison. Maybe Arya's new Hermione, okay? All right, let's move on. So,
sorry if I don't got your back there, man.
No, you can just say I'm right, because I am, okay?
Arya meets Jaqen H'ghar, a very mysterious character who is also heading up with the Night's Watch and the two other prisoners that are with him.
I thought they would be much uglier than they were.
Did you see the guy in the back? He was like snarling and
nasty. Okay, Biter was, but the other guy, I thought he was going to be... Because, okay, Jonkin's supposed to be fine. He's supposed to be normal. Well, H'ghar, isn't he supposed to be... Or this just Jonkin's last name, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right.
I liked his, I don't know, he's very sexy to me. His whole, like, persona.
What?
Well, I think Jonkin's supposed to be, and I agree, but the other guy, not Biter, the other guy was supposed to be, like, missing an eye or something. Really Uggles.
Uggles.
But Biter is definitely pretty awesome, because you could see he had, like, those canine teeth, everything was super sharp.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very nasty.
I'm excited to see more of them.
You guys are making a lot of good comparisons with the book, and, you know, maybe some name changes, and for what reasons. I was going to ask you, are there any characters on this Game of Thrones, the TV series, that maybe weren't written in the book?
I mean, we talked about last podcast that Roz was not in the books. She is only in the show.
Yeah. For the most part, it's just the main characters have remained intact, but some names have been changed here and there.
I mean, there's so many characters in the books. Why would you even need to add any more?
Yeah. Honestly?
They kind of talked about that, though, and actually Merillion, the guy who was singing the song and got his tongue pulled out, he was singing the song in front of Joffrey about Robert boar hunting and whatever, and he got his tongue pulled out. That wasn't actually supposed to happen and didn't happen in the books, and he comes back later as an important character, and at this point he can't talk. So George R. R. Martin was saying that, you know, David and Dan might actually have to create a character to fill in, you know, Merillion, yeah, to take his place.
Oh, yeah, actor talker, yes.
I don't know if that's going to work, and I'm not ready for sign language. Dothraki,
or
I can
another,
do.
Like, yeah, Dothraki's enough.
We'll get some, you know, more subtitles, all right?
I mean,
sign language.
Yeah, I mean, they can remove all those scenes, or they can create a character. So we'll see. There's room.
So coming back to Arya, we have the gold cloaks coming in this scene, and the awesome scene with Yoren, where Yoren is basically being
squaring
like, gold cloaks, well, get out of here. I don't need your crap. I do not care. So I like that scene, and both in the books and here, so that was fun to see. I love Yoren being a total badass.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got rid of him for now.
For now.
Yeah.
They're going to come back.
I was hoping they would come back this episode.
Yeah,
I guess not.
They're like inching out Arya's story. I was expecting, I guess maybe more hoping, because she's like my favorite character.
Yeah, because there's a lot of camping stuff that we miss, and also we miss a lot of the camaraderie that happens in the books, where Hot Pie and all the other orphan boys kind of all end up, at least when like they're looking for Gendry, everyone comes on their side, because at that point they build up so much camaraderie. They're like, Gendry's one of us now. Get out of here, cold cloaks.
Yeah.
And here they're kind of still questioning it. So I guess we're going to see that camaraderie form in future episodes.
I think so. It's still pretty early on their journey on the King's Road. So I think we'll see some of that, some more of that.
Okay, so let's move on then to the Watch. Actually, you know what? Let's do Targaryens. Let's end with the Watch, because the watch is how it ends. So let's do Targaryens.
I'm really upset that we didn't see enough Daenerys. I mean, that's clearly why I came in costume. But
thank you.
She's my favorite character. I really like Arya, but Daenerys is my favorite. I see her, you know, taking the throne at some point. And who doesn't want to be in the throne? I mean, everyone wants to be king, so why not? Why shouldn't I even want to be king? So, or queen. And we see her here with Jorah, and they're kind of just trying to survive out there in the wastelands.
Yeah, some devastating tidings come back on that horse.
Rikaro.
Ahead, devastating tidings.
Yes.
Just ahead.
Ricaro's head, and now we find out that he can't join his ancestors because his head's been cut off.
And Ricaro's been such an awesome guy like helping her out with everything, and no more. He's gone. But so I'm wondering, since you mentioned Daenerys being your favorite character, what about you, Simone? Who's your favorite character?
Arya probably is number one. Jaime Lannister, number two.
Oh.
That's why I'm doing this. I mean, I just knew.
But what house would you want to be? I mean, obviously, I wouldn't be a Targaryen.
I think I'd be a Lannister.
You want
to
be rich?
I do, yeah.
George R.R. Martin, they actually asked him what house he would want to belong to. And he said, you know what? It would be honorable to be a Stark, but I'm going to go with the riches. I want a kingdom. I'll be a Lannister.
It's the safest. Well,
it's good to be a Lannister.
Yeah.
He said he would pay his debts, though.
Nice.
You know,
how about you?
I love honor. I mean, that's kind of who I am. I believe in honesty and honor. So I would want to be a Stark, because I like that.
Nice. Thank you.
And I like the way they live. I think that's really cool. And, you know, as much as the riches are nice, I prefer to be around people that I like. So I would go with the Starks. But my favorite character would have to be Arya.
Yeah.
Arya,
she's my
is
second
so
favorite.
Awesome.
She is. She's just so courageous, and
I feel like they're both women who are gaining power and are
strong
rising.
Females.
This is going to be a side, but some of you will know what I'm talking about. My favorite book series ever is called The Son of the Linus Rampant. It's Alana, The First Adventure. It's about a girl who wants to be a knight, and she grows up pretending to be a boy to become a knight. And Arya's almost like that. So it's almost like one of my favorite characters growing up reading books. That's who Arya is.
Yeah. I love Arya. I can't wait to see more of her. Hopefully we'll get a little more for the next
episode. She's got some courage, unlike Sam. Although we find out Sam just might have some courage in this episode.
I think he has too much heart, and that's what's going to be his downfall.
So he wants to bring Gilly along with them.
Inbred.
Yes.
She's got that inbred overbite going on.
Oh.
It's kind of scary.
It's very warm in a way. Sorry.
One of Craster's daughters.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principal.
So she's pregnant and she wants to leave, but she's not willing to tell them why she wants to
go
with them.
She says, because I could have a son. Well, why is that a big deal?
Well, we find out by the end of this episode.
Well, why don't you cue us in on that? Because you had a good point,
Simone,
as to how you know.
This is a really small detail that I didn't actually notice, but the White Walkers actually have a noise that they make, and it's this like crackling. It almost sounds like someone stepping on like twigs or something, or like crackling some candy wrapper. But that's what we see at the end of this episode. Craster goes out into the woods bringing a young boy baby, and we hear this crackling. And Jon Snow, being the hero that he is, tries to go out and save the baby, but he encounters some scary fellows out there.
Can I just throw out he was
Craster
doing some, like,
actually hits him, though.
Yeah. It looked like he was doing some spin moves and some like twisting and turning. I don't know why, when you're running as fast as you can, you're going to be like, whoa, let me do these turns. But that's okay. Jon Snow is still pretty badass.
Yes.
So I can go with it.
So it seems like Craster has something going on, a sacrificial thing for maybe why he's kept so safe, a little trade-off going on with the wildlings.
Or the White Walkers.
White Walkers.
Yeah, so that's got to be the only reason.
Mm-hmm.
And we also get to see Ghost in this episode.
Yes, a full shot of Ghost. Looks huge.
Okay, so was that CG Ghost right there?
Yes, as far as I know,
Because that looked good. That was awesome.
Right. You know, they originally wanted to use werewolves, but since they were working with child actors, they decided not to. And also, it's illegal in the UK. But something intriguing and interesting to you is Sansa actually adopted Lady, which, you know, Lady unfortunately lost, was killed in the first season. So after season one wrapped, she adopted it as her own dog.
Aww.
Sophie Turner.
You've always got the juiciest little
factoids. That is awesome.
Crystal with the juice.
All right, guys. Well, let's go ahead and take a commercial break. And then we got a news alert for you. We got a special report.
So we want to thank some people.
Come back and listen to us when we come back.
After Buzz TV.
Hi. I was once like you, a lazy, angry loner whose only joy was watching TV and surfing the net. And, like you, after I'd see one of my favorite TV shows, I'd be so excited and have so many questions that I'd actually have to talk to my douchebag coworkers about it at the water cooler. Then I discovered AfterBuzzTV.com. AfterBuzzTV produces after-show webcasts and podcasts for TV series of all kinds, like post-game wrap-up shows for all your favorite TV shows. AfterBuzzTV hosts are industry insiders who break down episodes of shows, take calls from fans, and interview cast and crew from each series, with over 60 different after-shows, from Boardwalk Empire to American Idol to Vampire Diaries to Real Housewives and more. Now, after a night of TV, I can ignore my stupid coworkers, who I hate, and go straight to my desk and watch or listen to all my favorite AfterBuzz TV aftershows and have all the TV fan interaction I need. Thank you, AfterBuzz TV.
AfterBuzz TV, what do you want to buzz about?
I'll tell you guys what I want to buzz about. I want to buzz about Kristen's special report.
I've got a special edition
special report.
Okay, so...
yes, please. We got our own
music. So it's no secret that the opening sequence won an Emmy for best opening sequence of all television shows on TV right now.
For good reason.
Yeah, I mean, the map sequence is that map is the coolest map ever. I mean, it kind of mirrors their complex world, and they actually have all the locations of being mechanical, and the cities and the places that are featured in the opening credits, they change as the series progresses. Like, we saw Pentos in the very first episode when we were going to that continent, and then we didn't. So it's going to keep changing the intro.
And yeah, we definitely saw Dragonstone this time around, which you never
saw
before.
This time.
And you know what? I don't know if we saw Dragonstone in the first episode this season when I think about it, because I don't know if we did. I wasn't paying the most attention.
Yeah.
But I think that was actually new for this episode because maybe we hadn't been introduced to it yet in episode one.
I mean, that just shows how much they really put into this show because their intro changes like almost every episode. Who does that? What show?
This show. And they And, you know, they also talk about their locations a lot for this show, and that's something else that they put a lot of effort into, where they'll go to places where you should not be packing in as many people as they are in these locations they find in Northern Ireland and other places. And they talk about how hard it is to shoot sometimes with the mud getting all over everybody, but they do it anyways. And it's almost harder than some films to shoot this show, but they do it because this show is that good.
It's pretty incredible that they shot in Iceland. Like, can you imagine? Like, that's got to be so cold.
Well, Iceland is Greenland, is actually the green one. Greenland's the cold one.
Really?
Because they changed the names around. So, like, when people were attacking, people would think Greenland was the nice one. So they would go to Greenland thinking it'd be nice. But it turns out that that's icy and crap. And Iceland's actually the green pretty one.
Huh.
So
interesting.
There's some
good to know
knowledge dropped on
You've
everybody. So I know, Simone, you had a question that you want to talk about.
Some news and gossip. Here.
Yes.
AfterBuzz.
She gets the music.
Whoa. Okay. So apparently, there's some comparisons going around that this is the Sopranos of Middle Earth. Middle Earth, of course, being a reference to J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings and that whole setting, which is also medieval in its own right. I don't think this show should be compared to the Sopranos. It's completely different.
And what about the Lord of the Rings?
Well, that's not a far-off comparison. But even still, it's so much darker than Lord of the Rings. The Lord of the Rings is a lot more redemptive.
What are you talking about with Sauron? Sauron's pretty dark.
Yeah.
Simone.
Basically, there's no comparison for how amazing this show is.
Yeah, and Kit Harington actually was asked in an interview what he thought about that. And he was like, "We actually all regret that comparison. Like, we don't think it should be called The Sopranos of Middle-Earth."
And I can see where that comes from, because Sopranos is very political, gangster-based, and then Middle-Earth is fantasy, so you combine the two. But I don't see that at all, because Sopranos is all about mobs and gangsters, politics between families, whereas this is more of a very much like political world view, as opposed to just like one family's issues. And the Middle Earth thing, I don't really get either, because Middle Earth is, to me, it's a totally different world.
Oh,
this is a different world that George R. R. Martin has created. They're both great. I love them both.
It's much more dirtier.
Yeah, gritty. Totally.
I mean, we have a lot more sex in this world, so maybe I like this world more. Well, that's the way I took it. And you also have some other news for us, don't you?
Yes. So we mentioned the Dothraki language last week, which was very interesting.
It was our special edition.
Yes, it was. But there's actually going to be a special. There was a special aired today on CNN with the Dothraki language creator, David J. Peterson, who is the subject of this 30-minute feature on CNN. So if you didn't catch it today at 2 o'clock, you can probably catch a rerun of it sometime.
Or try to DVR it somehow.
Yeah.
Too.
And last week, there was 6.3 million viewers watching the premiere of Game of Thrones, which is a 77% increase from season one premiere.
So, 77%?
Yes, increase from season one premiere.
Wow.
So people talked to their friends. Everyone went out, bought the DVD set.
Yeah.
And good thing. Have you guys seen how many posters?
Real quick. That's why we tell everybody, hey, tell your friends about AfterBuzz, because that whole, like you say, when everyone in your circle is talking about Game of Thrones, Game of Thrones, Game of Thrones,
word
like
of mouth.
You want to know about it. Again, you guys are the ones drawing me in. So we kind of hope that happens with AfterBuzz, and we encourage everyone to tell everybody, hey, I saw the greatest after show. It's with Kristen, Simone, Dave, and they really break it down with Game of Thrones. So we want that.
Can I throw out, we live in Los Angeles. We're land of movie posters, and I have seen so many Game of Thrones
it's
season
everywhere.
Two posters.
It's in my dreams.
And all I could think was, if you didn't watch season one, you've got to be lost during season two. I was surprised by all that placement, but I guess it's working. If you're saying there's a 77% increase, I guess it was smartly placed.
Right, and just speaking about our fans, Ronnie Jr. bringing it up, we wanted to thank our YouTube viewers and also our iTunes listeners.
Yes, thank
you guys.
I have
a few names. The Andrew Fig, It's Overman 831, Mr. J. Klein 4, Sarah 1994, The Savage, D. Passione, Zarzar 7, Amelia Jr., Nate Dogg, Jacob K., Kevin McCarthy. Thank all of you.
Thank you guys.
For rating us and posting a comment, and please continue
and
to do so.
And if you do have any comments, too, that you want us to bring up, comments on the YouTube, and we'll
call
try and
us.
Bring it up, or call us live, because we are live, and call us, and we'll talk about it, too. So we'll bring it up. But guys, predictions.
Oh, predictions.
Yes. Predictions. Okay.
Now,
where are they?
AfterBuzz TV. Predictions.
So we see the Night Watch is actually kicked out of Craster's area anyway, and I guess that's because of Jon Snow peeking around and seeing what he's doing with all the boy babies.
Whoops, goodbye boy babies. Now we know, but girl babies can stay. We also have Cersei threatening Tyrion.
Yeah, she says Ned Stark had a piece of paper too that said he was the Hand of the King, and that didn't keep him safe, so Tyrion may be having to keep his eyes open at night.
And we were all talking about how much we wish there was more Arya stuff during this episode, and we get to see during these coming attractions that we're going to get some more Arya coming up.
Yes.
Thank you. And some fighting going on.
And the Starks are coming back. It looks like Rob's just enjoying being King of the North, though.
So, yeah, think about this. We did not get a single scene of Rob Stark or Catelyn Stark or any of the Starks.
Or Joffrey or Sansa.
Well, I guess if you count Arya, we do. But outside that, the actual proper Starks in the way. None of it. So, yeah, you're right. Sansa, too. We didn't get her either.
Or Joffrey, our favorite.
Joffrey.
Who's favorite again?
Most hated, I
guess. I want a slap meme. New slap meme, guys. Come on.
But winter is coming. That's all you need to know.
Yes. Theon arguing with his sister as the last point that I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. Well, thank you again for joining us this week. Tell all your friends, as Ronnie Jr. was saying. I am Dave Klein. You can find me on Twitter at TheDaveKlein or my website, djk-online.com.
And I'm Simone Boyce. You can find me on Twitter at Simone Boyce. And also check out more Game of Thronesy stuff on my YouTube channel at youtube.com/SimoneDBoyce.
And I'm Kristen Snyder, and you can Google Cinematic Escape, or you can find Cinematic Escape on Twitter.
So convenient. Three times the Cinematic Escape. What about Ronnie Jr.? I want to hear about you, Ronnie Jr.
Yeah, where can we find you, Ronnie?
As a new Game of Thrones viewer, only courtesy of you guys, at Ronnie Jr. Media. And of course, follow us at AfterBuzz TV as well. That's it.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for watching.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.